Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas City, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Beach Pass,
Toronto FC, Salt Lake,
this is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire,
this is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew,
FC Dallas,
New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for downloading it. Also, thank you very much for tolerating, putting up with the little audio glitch we had in last week's episode. And thank you to producer Mark for being so on the ball and fixing it. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's because producer Mark got it done. And if you do know what we're talking about, got a clean version of last week's conversation with Mike Petke available for you at pitchpass.com. That's also where you'll find all of the shows that we've done, not just this season, but in the past few seasons as well. Later on, we'll talk with Sebastian Salazar of Comcast Sportsnet Mid-Atlantic. Probably focus a lot on DC United as they are continuing their surprising start to the year, but we'll also take a look around the league at some other MLS storylines. But first, we head to Dallas, where they have enjoyed a very, very nice start to their year as well, in part due to their offense. And one of their main offensive threats is our first guest on Pitch Pass. It's Tesho Ekundele. Tesho, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. And here's the thing that excites me about you. Subconsciously, you can't give me the canned answers of we don't read the papers, we don't watch the media, because after you scored your goal, your game-winning goal against LA this past weekend, you specifically referenced an article on MLSsoccer.com where they called out your supposed slump. So you do read the papers.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely saw that one. You know, it had my name all over it, so of course I saw it, but you know, it's like, it's my job to not really take that to heart. It's the media's job to write about stories, write about what's happening. It's my job to go out there and score goals. So but I wasn't too worried about it.
You did use it as a little bit of fuel, or at least it was in the back of your mind.
I think a little bit. I guess I didn't want it to. I didn't really personally believe I was in the slump, but, you know, I'm glad nobody else can really think that right now.
I'm surprised you didn't do the old finger on the mouth, but not for your own crowd, but just as a media, shush, please.
Yeah, I was thinking of trying to brush the dirt off my shoulder or something, but I got caught up in the moment, so I forgot to do it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's hard to write or at least read an article and think that. Just because, A, it's early in the season, but also the squad that FC Dallas has, if you're not banging in goals, I don't know if that just means you're in a slump or there's just other people who are stepping up or picking up slack or even it's their turn to kind of carry the load for a while.
Yeah, we have so many good players on offense. I mean, everybody who's played offense so far this season on our team has scored at least a goal. So, you know, if you're not scoring, somebody else is going to take their opportunity. And you know, it's just my job to, when my chance came back around, I need to take my opportunity. And, you know, whoever spot I take will be then ready to take somebody else's opportunity. So it's just constant competition, but I think it kind of fuels us and makes everybody better.
I want to talk a little bit about your international future in a little bit, but this competition for places that you were just discussing and we see as people who follow MLS and FC Dallas, this has got to really be good. And I know a lot of players will say competition is good, but I think in your case, it's true because you are in a situation now where you do have to compete for a place because there is such high level competition for offensive places at FC Dallas. And that's got to translate well as you start thinking about where you're going to play internationally.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it helps me become a better player, obviously. But I think internationally I'm more just worried about how I feel personally than how I'm playing. I think, like, it's more of a personal decision, like, where you feel pride about.
About where, like, who you're representing?
Yeah, like, who you're representing, yeah, as far as that goes.
I saw on Twitter that you retweeted somebody, like a fan, had like field level seats and had a really good angle of your goal. What's it like when you look at a video like that and you feel and you hear the excitement that an action that you did caused amongst fans and people who were watching the match?
It's crazy. I mean, just like 15,000 people are cheering for something that you did. And I remember growing up as a kid, I would be watching, you know, MLS games, and I was one of the fans cheering. So it's so crazy to be on the field, something that I dreamed about my whole life. and everybody's cheering for me. It's just, it's the best feeling in the world, hands down.
Yeah, I got to think that's you know, you scored the game-winning goal. That's awesome. But the exhilaration of hearing that release of fans as this is what they've wanted and you've delivered it for them goes through your body as you put that ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it was like the 80-something minute, and I was exhausted right before that goal. But after that, you know, I could have run like 10 miles straight. I just felt so great after that. It just re-energizes you, you know. It's an amazing feeling.
Now, I've been reading up on you, and I noticed that you, in high school, you were honor roll 4 times. Now, does that mean you made it 4 times over the course of 4 years, or at the end of every year, you were on the honor roll?
I was always on the honor roll,
like throughout all four years.
I always had A's and B's, so I was just always a good student.
I'm trying to gauge your smartness as it pertains to book learning. Were you National Honor Society?
Yeah, I was in that.
Oh, so that's the upper level now. See, that's good.
Yeah, that's upper level. I mean, I went to the school of mines. You know, it's not easy to get into that school. You definitely have to have good grades, be a smart person. So that kind of shows what kind of student I was, I guess.
Yeah. And you know, that National Honor Society, it's a nice little feather in the cap. Nobody can take that away from you. I like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Does this make you now the most famous graduate of the School of Mines?
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of people that graduated from the School of Mines that did really good things in engineering. But I think, you know, it hasn't been too many athletes to come from there, so I think I'm one of the more famous athletes to come from that school for sure.
Who else is in the running? Name some of these engineers and let me just see if I recognize any of the names.
Are they athletes?
Or any School of Mines graduate that people would know, you think?
I mean, I don't know. I couldn't name too many of them.
The engineers toil in obscurity, sadly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you see a big bridge, but you don't know who built it.
Exactly,
you know?
Yes.
If they didn't get the right training from the School of Mines, you wouldn't be safe on that big bridge.
And I guess that's the misnomer about School of Mines is people think, oh, School of Mines, where are mines at these days? But that's really the area of expertise is the engineering department.
Yeah, all kinds of engineering. Because, I mean, I studied electrical engineering. There's a lot of people who come from Texas, actually, to the school, and they do petroleum engineering, and there's chemical, so they do all kinds of engineering over there. The school's an engineering school.
So let's do a little bit of discussion on the international career. And you mentioned earlier that it's about where you feel comfortable and where you feel the biggest sense of pride. If you could, what would be one pro and one con of each of the countries that are in play for you without getting too much into it, I guess?
I guess a pro for Canada, we'll start with Canada. I was born there and kind of growing up my whole life. I mean, I was always a Canadian citizen. So when I was imagining my future, I was thinking about the Canadian national team because I never knew I was going to become an American. So that's a pro for Canada. It's just kind of, it's always been like my home country.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess a con for them is just like statistically, they haven't been the best over the past few years, even though they're looking a lot better right now, but that could be the only downside. And a pro for the U.S., I did grow up most of my life in the U.S., so that's a pro. I mean, I'd call my hometown, like Thornton, Colorado, so
yeah,
that's in the U.S. I think a con is maybe, you know, you wouldn't be able to get too much game time with the U.S. right now because they have a lot of competition and a lot of positions, so it's just kind of a balancing act.
Yeah, and I appreciate your candor in this because, to me, when I look at you as an outsider, the exact pro and the exact con for both sides is it. And, you know, I think a lot of people are maybe wondering when you're going to make your decision. But, I mean, it's a decision that you can't take lightly, and it's a decision that you're going to have to live with for the rest of your international future.
Yeah, it's definitely a really personal decision. And, you know, it's lifelong. It's not like, oh, you know, I think I made the wrong decision. I'm going to change my mind. Like, once you decide to play for a national team, you have to feel complete pride for that country, and you have to just be dedicated to that country, that team, for the rest of your life. So it's not a decision I want to take lightly.
You know, in a lot of ways, it's a lot like when you sit down for a Settlers of Catan game and you decide on your strategy. Once you've made the strategic decision, you can't go back and say, all right, well, I'm not a wool guy anymore. I've got to go brick. You're a wool guy till the end of the game.
Exactly. You got to be all in on your strategy, and you have to believe in it. So you don't want to rush in Settlers of Catan, just like you don't want to rush with this.
Exactly. You know, and did you like my analogy at least?
I like that because, I mean, we always play that game. A bunch of us over here at Dallas play Settlers all the time, so it's a great analogy.
Ethan Finley of Columbus Crew is also touting the praises of Settlers of Catan. They've got a little more, they got publicity over their Settlers of Catan game, so to speak. Who in FC Dallas plays with you when you sit down for a game?
I guess Chris Seitz, Walker Zimmerman, Ryan Hollingshead, Victor Uyela, Jack Lloyd. You know, those are some guys that play.
Okay, and so if we were to sit down, having never seen the guys from the Crew play, you know, we're doing a match, but it's not a match on the pitch. It's a match at the Catan table. Who are you looking at, and who do you think comes out on top?
I think Dallas comes out on top every single time. I think if it was an eight-player game, we would have the 4-4, we'd have the first four spots for sure.
Now, Ed, can you explain why? Because here's the thing. You have no scouting report. You don't know what they're bringing to the table. So what makes you so confident in Dallas's skills?
I think you just have to be confident. I have nothing to base it off of, but that's just kind of who we are. You know, we're, as a professional athlete, you have to be a confident, competitive person. So, you know, I'm not just going to expect that we would lose. Of course, I'm going to assume we'll win that.
You know, I thought you were going to really get dig deep and say, okay, well, Walker really focuses on this strategy, which is going to be helpful, whereas myself, I do this. So there's no strategy that you guys are locked into. You are very fluid Catan players.
Yeah, definitely. We dabble in a little bit of everything.
Are there other these games, because my wife is really into Settlers of Catan and she likes a couple other games as well. Are there other games that you, a National Honor Society student, could recommend to a guy like me?
Monopoly. I love playing Monopoly.
Monopoly?
Great.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been super into Monopoly since like last year. We've been playing some hardcore Monopoly, so I recommend that to anybody.
Doesn't the games go a little too long, though?
It depends how you play. You know, we play for blood, so everybody just rushes all in, spends as much money. You try to knock people out as fast as possible, so it usually takes about an hour for a game.
Is there a version that you like to play, or are you strictly old-school Monopoly, I'm the horse, you're the shoe, Monopoly version?
There's this version that we got that has credit cards instead of cash money.
What?
And that's the version that we've been playing. Yeah, there's no cash, so just one person's the banker, and they deal with the credit cards the whole game.
You know,
that's the one that we're always playing.
I like that because then you can learn the value or maybe the downside of using credit cards as opposed to cash. You can use it in real life.
Yeah, for sure. And you don't realize how much money you're spending when you're using the credit card too, just like in real life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tesho, I appreciate the time, man. Way to break out of your slump, quote unquote, and continue success for the rest of the season, man. I appreciate the time.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
That's Tesho Ekandeli. Very, very intelligent young man. Felt like about 80 as I said that. You know another intelligent young man? A guy who works for Comcast Sportsnet Mid-Atlantic. He is a very good friend of the show, and if you are familiar with our history together, this will be like a Capital Soccer Show kind of reunion. Sebastian Salazar is our second guest. He joins us right now. Sebi, how you doing, man?
I'm great, man. I'm glad to be back on the show and glad to be back in D.C. and you told me we were going to go grab a beer. That still hasn't happened yet, so I'm putting you on blast right now.
Yeah, let's make that happen, please. We'll invite everybody. Every Pitch Pass listener who lives in the DMV can join us. We could talk soccer for like 3 hours. That'd be fun.
A tweet up,
exactly.
Right? That's what the kids call it?
That is what the kids are calling it. Nice work. You know, I was thinking about you recently, and it was as we get into our soccer talk, CONCACAF Champions League, the final, you are, and it's historic for you. It's not, you didn't just glom onto a team because
right.
you like the colors, but you are a Club America guy. So what was it like, you know, kind of going through, and I know you're a huge MLS guy now, but it was kind of like your upbringing versus your current passion. How was that watching the finals?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited for an MLS team to eventually win that competition because I think it's so critical to the marketability of the league, the connection to the Club World Cup and kind of the elite levels of soccer, which when you talk about it from kind of a building the brand of MLS in this country, I think is huge. I'll be honest with you, though, I didn't want Montreal Impact to be the first MLS team to win. That's not a knock on Montreal. I just wanted it to be an American team. And so I think because of that, and then you throw in, like you mentioned, kind of my family's Mexico City roots and a long history of rooting for Club America, and I was kind of torn, but the other part of that is that looking at the way the Champions League played out after DC United's elimination, I couldn't help but thinking this should be DC and Club America. And that kind of kept coming back to haunt me. So I wasn't rooting against Montreal, but I wasn't rooting for them either, if that makes sense. It was kind of tough, but at the end of the day, I got to go with the blood over a team that, while they do represent MLS,
yes,
and have American players, are not an American team. And so for whatever reason, that kind of line in the sand made a difference for me.
You know, you brought up DC United, and obviously in the back of a lot of United fans' minds, it was, wow, that should have been DC United in that spot, which would have made this question even harder for you. Actually, it would have made it a hard question as opposed to, okay, I know where I'm going.
Yeah, I would have had to go with DC United there, just because I would love to be able to talk some smack to the family down in Mexico. I think it would have been a really cool matchup. If you look at the numbers, though, if you look at the money, and Montreal does spend a bit, the finances between a team like Club America and a Montreal Impact, and then even more so a DC United. I mean, the gap there financially is just massive. I mean, the amount that these Mexican teams can spend, especially a higher end. I mean, Club America spends as much as anybody in Mexico. So you're talking, I don't know, between 15, probably 22 million in assets on that roster. And I just think that's a lot to overcome. And I think what you saw was both the semifinal and the final for Club America, when they hit that high end, CONCACAF teams just couldn't keep up. I mean, what they did to Montreal in the second half of the second leg, and what they did in the semifinal, going up 4-0, you know, basically in 15 to 20 minutes, was just incredible. I don't know that I've ever seen them play that well, and I watch them quite a bit, and I've seen them play well and win some championships recently in Mexico. So, you know, they've been playing well for a while, but what they did in the back end of those two games was just uber impressive, and I think really kind of gives you the idea of the difference between, not like on a one game basis, what a Mexican team or a MLS team could do, because that's always the randomness of soccer, but what the high end,
yes,
of that big money will get you, and that's the difference. If a team, if America goes to that fifth gear, I don't even know if there's a team in Mexico that can play with them.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a great summation of what we're talking about and why salary caps, we were kind of hoping they would be a little higher for this current CBA, because you're right. There's only a certain amount of ceiling that a team under a strict cap like an MLS team is going to be under, rather than where you see a team whose cap is a lot higher, if there is a cap, what they could do on their best day. And, you know, we always go with soccer, the ball bounces the same, the ball is round, we can do whatever we want. But when you have the potential to do X rather than down here X, there's always that difference in that chasm. And if a team goes to that level, like you said, that higher gear, there's no competing with them.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting, right? Like, one of the things that came out of the CBA was fans reacting to, like, oh, the players lost, or the players won, or the owners lost, or the owners won. But the big thing where the fans, I think, kind of felt like they lost, because really the fans won. We didn't miss any soccer. Mm-hmm. We got a deal done. But the one, he's like, wow, if we'd have had this salary cap increment, if we'd have seen that go up a little bit more noticeably, that would directly impact on-field play. But here's the reality, is if the owners weren't willing to push the cap, some of them may not be willing to spend. And so, like, it to me, it maybe gives us a realistic picture from a fan standpoint of what the actual economics are for most MLS teams. And I think we focus on the Seattles, we focus on the Portlands, we focus on the teams that are on national TV every week and the success stories. But there's still teams that have a long way to go to making enough money to validate kind of these next level DP signings, and then also just beyond that, like the ability to pay a left back $200,000 versus $80,000. You know what I mean? Like that's a big difference too. It's not, it won't grab as many headlines. It won't bring as many fans and seats. But if you're paying every position in your starting 11 $150,000 more to make it better quality, that's going to add up quick. And for some of these owners who are already operating in the red, I can't blame them for wanting to in some way limit that damage down the road.
Agreed. And as a guy who is in a union in radio, I can tell you that I feel like one of their only options. They're playing the long game in that you're not getting seven different new things in a CBA. It's let's get this and then down the road, let's get that. But it doesn't happen overnight. And I know it's frustrating for fans or people on the outside looking in, but that's how negotiations between management and unions work. And I understand your point about the owners. I guess my big thing where I get hung up on is I understand the owner's point of view. I understand the player's point of view. I don't like the league's point of view, and especially Don Garber, and especially the statements where he makes these grandiose statements that are in no way backed up by what the owners are willing to do and what the players are willing to give.
Yeah, I mean, there's a disconnect, and but I think that's the reality of this. We look, for the longest time, kind of the message out of MLS headquarters, and you can't blame them, has been all positive, all of the sunshine, all of the good. And that's how you have to proceed if you're working out of MLS headquarters, and that's what you have to put forward. The owners operate in the financial realities, not all of which are positive. In fact, many of which are technically negative, minus. I was enthralled by the CBA just because, one, it happened right here.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was such an interesting case study, and the thing that you mentioned really stuck out to me. Boy, I don't envy the players, man. And this is something I said at the time. Like, it's really hard to ask guys who to be like, I'm going to threaten to strike and hurt my family for the good of somebody I may never play with.
Yes.
Or for a deal that will come way after I'm gone. But really, like, when people say the players lost the play, these players may have not gotten what they wanted, but they were never going to get what they wanted. So the fact that, like, the free agency iceberg was cracked means that the next time you come around, the crack gets deeper. And then the next time it's deeper. So
exactly.
Now at least you're cracking down. You're bargaining down. As you say, it's step by step by step. But if I think in every way the players could walk away from this and say, we didn't throw the snowball down the hill, but we got it going, and eventually gravity is gravity. Gravity's going to win. So, like, all of those long-term goals will happen. In some way, I don't envy the players. I respect the heck out of the guys who had to make these tough decisions that will probably never benefit them and are in, you know, air quotes, for the good of the game, for the good of the league, for the good of guys that you're never going to play with or you're never going to know.
Yeah, and that's union life in a nutshell,
right.
is to say that we're going for the greater good rather than the oh, I can get $50,000 extra over the course of 3 years. I'll take it. You've got to think long-term, and for the players to make that decision and do it in a way, like you said, where, you know, guy in his 30s right now is never going to see the benefits of what was accomplished in the CBA. Hats off to them for saying, look, this is what we need to do for the long-term growth of our union in this league.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not an easy position for anybody to be in. And I think at the end of the day, this is also the reality. I don't think the players wanted to strike. I mean, nobody wants to strike, but I don't know that enough guys had their heart in it. I don't know that enough guys felt like, you know, that the strike would deliver in 2 to 3 months any more than what they were getting. I think the owners really held the line well, and that troubles me as, you know, a raging liberal to say that, but I think that the reality is the owners made it clear, like, hey, like, whatever you do, like, it's not going to make it any better. Like, this is the best we can do, and I don't know that. I think in that way the owners held their kind of their direct line better. The long term line, I think, has been broken in a way that, you know, the owners will never get back.
Let's talk about some fun stuff, like some things happening in the world of MLS. And obviously, we're both in D.C., so let's start with D.C. United. As we record this, they picked up a come-from-behind win against Orlando City at RFK. Look, people keep waiting. I don't know if people are waiting for the bottom to drop out or waiting for the team to regress to where people expect them to be. Hasn't happened yet. Now, the one caveat, I think, to any discussion we have about United is their home schedule is very front loaded. So
yep.
There's going to be a lot of road games towards the end of the season. How, having said that, their road form thus far has not been bad. Their only loss is on the road, but they picked up a big win in Vancouver, and they picked up a win in Orlando, who, by the way, have been picking up points at home, if not wins. So their road form hasn't been bad, but where are you right now with this United team and their prognosis for the season?
I mean, I just don't think you can look at anything that they've done and not be blown away. And some of the, I almost, when I say that, I feel like I'm disrespecting this team. Because I am surprised by what they've done. But the reality is, when you look at 1 through 17 or 1 through 16, they may be actually the best paper team or one of the best paper
Agreed.
Teams, certainly, in MLS. Now, we don't tend to look at teams that way. We tend to look at teams at 1 through 5. What's your high end? What are the guys in the papers? Who are the guys you know? We got X, Y, Z, and B, and A. And you got, like, Chris Rolfe, like, yeah, he's kind of good, but
yeah.
No. That's not how this works. Certainly not with the grind of a schedule that DC United is about to go through. I mean, you look at the back end of May, all of June, until about midway through July, once they hit that last game before the July 4th break there. All that depth is where this team is going to make their hay. Because as other teams go through that, I don't know that other teams are 1 through 16 as good as DC United. I've been super impressed. I think the road form, to borrow from Ben Olsen, has been a little bit lucky. I know he said it tongue-in-cheek, but you know that game in Orlando, I think it's fair to say Orlando City got the better of play. I mean, I remember four or five, maybe a half dozen one-on-ones where Bill Hamid's, and does what he does, and DC United gets out of there with a great free kick from Luis Silva. And then the Vancouver result, very impressive just on paper. You look at it, and Vancouver goes down a man, and then Vancouver came at him, even a man down, for a long time in that second half. But, you know, at the end of the day, are we going to really be picky about pulling 3 points on the road? I mean, it doesn't really matter. It always doesn't matter how you get 3 points, but on the road, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So those results are all positive. But the home draws, I mean, you know, Sporting Kansas City on the 9th of May, I'm not going to pick too much at that. The goal came, then it was a quick equalizer. But the second half leads given up against New York and Houston
yes.
really hurt. Because I think those are points that if you bank them, and look, DC United's off to an incredible start. So maybe we're being a little bit greedy. But if you bank those points, you're sitting and you're looking at this team and you're thinking, the playoffs are a lock. Now we start building toward – and to say that this early is absurd. But you start thinking like, okay, this team mathematically is in a really good way. Now we start thinking about playoff positioning, about maybe a shot at the top of the conference, a shot at the supporter shield. But dropping points like that early at home – it's always going to come back to haunt you in some way. Maybe it's the difference between first and second or first and third, depending on how close the East gets. Or maybe it's the difference between, you know, third and fifth and having an extra game. I mean, there's a lot of ways in which that can come back because, again, they're about to hit a part of their schedule that is, as you said, not as home-heavy as the front part, and it's just a grind. I mean, it's not just game after game after game. It's ridiculous travel. I mean, I don't know if MLS has it out for DC United, but they're going basically coast to coast a couple times. Toronto to Seattle.
Yeah.
I think there's another New England to Portland within 4 days. I mean, it's almost like, whoa, what's going on here? But you know, whatever, they'll have to prove it, and they have the roster built for it.
I loved your point about the way that the team is constructed, 1 through 17. Because you're right. Usually you look at teams and you look at highs, big highs and big lows, whereas this team is kind of consistent along the way. And I was thinking about that as you start thinking about how Ben Olsen's going to do his squad rotation during this big stretch of games. And you're right. You look at a guy like Chris Roth. Taylor Twellman even said it on the broadcast on ESPN. He loves him as a third option. And I feel like the team is built with a lot of third options. But you put all those guys together and you put a guy like Espíndola in there who is a second or maybe first option. And you bring off a Luis Silva who is a great third option. And you replace him with a Chris Rolfe who is a great third option. These kind of good guys all end up to this is a kind of good team.
And let's look at the ages, too. I mean, the reality here is that these guys will not be able to travel cross-country, play 90 minutes in back-to-back games. Some of these guys inching towards 30 or on the wrong side of 30. That's just not realistic. You can't ask guys to do that. Some of these Northwest games playing on turf, that's going to be a big ask. So I think you also you have versatility in, okay, is Chris Rolfe going to be in my starting lineup or is he not? I mean, I wouldn't take Chris Rolfe out of any starting lineup right now. That's just me on this. But you also have a variety of ways in which you can play guys.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Pontius, I think we can say way more comfortable in a midfield role, but can play forward. Chris Rolfe can play the tweener role. Luis Silva can play the tweener role. So now not only do you have the advantage of, hey, if somebody gets hurt, I got a guy I can plug into two spots, and I can use him and get him some run in multiple different roles. You're also creating some game planning nightmares for teams that are trying to get scouting reports on you. I don't know if Chris Rolfe is coming off the bench or if he's starting, and I don't know what position he's going to play if I'm an opposing coach. Well, that's tough to get ready for. And I think Ben Olsen has a really, really good beat on, and this is just what I perceive to be and understand to be his evolution as a coach, how to tinker with those things, how to move somebody from, you know, Chris Rolfe from an outside midfielder to a withdrawn forward, how to create a position for Luis Silva that's kind of nebulous and maybe confusing for other teams. The movement of Chris Pontius, shuttling him back and forth between forward and outside mid. I think Ben's really starting to get a sense of when to use those cards, and that makes the depth way more dangerous. You can have all the depth you want if you don't know how to use it. I think he really knows how to use it, and he's only getting better with it.
I wanted to ask you about, because I'm as an Ajax fan, I am infinitely aware and familiar with the Ajax plan of maintaining or sustaining their level of success or their level of play. And that is, we've got these young guys, we're never going to be able to hang on to them forever, but when they're coming up on their deals, we're going to re-sign them with the intent of, okay, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, thank you for the 3-year deal. In a year and a half, though, we are selling you, and you are signing this to make a little more money now and to give back to the team that groomed you a good transfer fee down the road. This is one of the things, and we just talking about CBA, that I like about this version of MLS is that it is becoming that sort of model. You're never going to be the top-tier league in the next decade or so, but you can become a really good second or third tier team tier league where you give the top teams or the top leagues players, but you make your money on transfer fees and invest it back in. You saw it just happen with Bill Hamid, where he signed a deal, which you know he's not going to be here for the end of, but it ensures a good transfer fee for DC United. They did it with Andy Nahar. You're going to see the back end of that when Anderlecht sells him probably this summer. The thing that makes me nervous though now is, and this is where the CBA gets fuzzy again, I didn't even know Perry Kitchen's contract was up until Grant Wall throws it out in a story earlier this week. Why do I not know that? And how do we get more of this this veil of secrecy off where it's, okay, this is how long his deal is and this is when it's up? I asked Chris Pontius on this show, when is your deal up? And he was hesitant to tell me because that's not something that they talk about. That's got to change.
I get what you're saying, and as somebody who's a reporter, like, of course, the free flow of information is beneficial. It gives us more to talk about, and that would be my argument to it from an MLS standpoint, because it starts with the league, and every press release you see per terms of the, you know, per league terms, the, you know, whatever, terms of this agreement, non-disclosed. But if you want people to discuss, hey, this is a big year for Chris Pontius. It is his contract year.
Like, yes.
It's his last chance on this big money to prove he's worth this big money. That's a talking point. That's an interest. Perry Kitchen, you know, same thing. I think that a lot of that is something that I've always gone back to with this league and the people involved in this league, and that's players, coaches, general managers. And listen, this is from my side of the aisle, and I am the media, the big, bad, evil media. Everybody in MLS wants attention. Everybody in MLS wants more love, a bigger piece of the media pie. Unless you're talking about their contracts, unless you're talking about their money, or unless you're talking about a bad game they had, which is part of the deal.
Yep.
And so I think there's a lot of guys in this league who have a thick skin, and probably a majority of them. And that's players, general managers, media relations people. Look, I know a lot of them. I'm friendly with a lot of them. But I think there's a little bit of a reluctance to go to that place, to really open this thing up and allow people to dive in on all this and really start talking about the league. I had a conversation with a guy last year who's very young, is on about $200,000, and said he wasn't paid enough for the people to talk trash on him on Twitter. And I thought, boy, like, you know, you are literally – you probably make – call all your friends that you went to college
exactly.
with and ask them all how much you're making and how much they're making and tell me how much more you are. I mean, you know, so I think everybody wants more attention when it's good and when it's about the league. But when it's on you, you know, I think people shy away. And so when that when that's with the players or with the coaches or with the front offices, it's way harder for the league who wants this extra attention – to kind of push those things out in this hyper media age where, you know, that stuff can turn into an internet kind of firestorm quickly. And suddenly there are a lot of people talking about how much money Perry Kitchen makes and is he worth it? And that's, you know, that's sensitive.
Yeah.
I get that's sensitive, man. That's your livelihood.
So how familiar were you with Perry Kitchen's contract status? Did this take you by surprise? As a fan, I kind of relaxed once I saw the Hamid deal come through, thinking, okay, you know, the team's a little old, but then had some really nice young key players who are younger. Everybody's locked in, and then this Perry Kitchen news gets dropped on me, and I'm like, oh, wait a second. Now I've got to think about the linchpin of the midfield possibly leaving this summer, so we could maybe get some money from him.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I had always heard some things about Perry to Europe. And so the exact time of his contract, I didn't know, but until this report came out. But his rookie deal there's a kind of like generic time that you expect. Okay, like at this time,
yeah.
This guy's going to come up, and he's going to hit that. So the fact that there hadn't been any news of a renegotiated deal or anything made me think like at some point that's a line that needs to be crossed by the club. And obviously Perry's a guy who has earned it, you know, has earned whatever that number might be in terms of keeping a talent here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Perry's overseas value is. I don't know what Bill Hamid's is, but I know there's some. I think Perry's the type of guy that as we see him more at the international level, that question will be answered. Look, they both have two appearances. But we know kind of where Bill stands on the hierarchy or near where he stands of American goalkeeping. In terms of American center midfielders right now, I think that's really high up in the air, both where Perry sits and just in general in that holding midfield role, what kind of the overall quality of that pool is as it transitions away from,
yes.
You know, from the past era, the you know, the Beckerman and whatnot. So
but it also doesn't seem to be an overly valued position as from a Europeans looking to America to fill that void.
Yeah, exactly. That's not a sexy position. It's not a position you're going to put a ton of money in. I mean, that's just, not when you can pluck a kid out of your academy or find a
yeah.
guy in your league that you know fits that job in that league. Because that's also a job, I think, that is different league to league. A holding midfielder in Mexico plays different than a holding midfielder in MLS, plays different than a holding midfielder in England. So to, you know, that kind of, and within each team, within each system, even more so. So it's hard to see a guy like Perry Kitchen and know exactly how his game, you know, will produce at the next level. Or so, not the next level, in a different league.
Yes. So when I hate speculating, it's still May. So it's hard to say, hey, that's, these guys are the odds on favorite for MLS. So I don't want to do that. But if we could play a mini version of the stock game, who are you buying right now as far as league form that could translate through the rest of the season?
I mean, I'm loading up on FC Dallas. I just love watching them play. I think they are so dynamic. I think they've got guys who right now maybe aren't producing, which means you would hope that those guys like a Tetra Akindele like kind of hit the stride that they hit last year. So there's still, to me, some growth potential for FC Dallas. And watching Castillo play is literally like it's the most fun in Major League Soccer. I mean, when he gets the ball at his feet, it is
– agreed.
I mean, I'm just like, yep, all right, let's see what he's going to do.
Agreed.
You know, and I just like that. I like how they play. You know, I like how they're coached, and I think they're in a good spot. Seattle, to me, just because of the – now, we, you know, wait on the Obafemi Martins, you know, medical news. But Seattle, just because of their forward talent, I mean, you have guys who score goals. You've invested in the front line. I always say you spend money, you spend it on forwards. They've done it, and when Martins and Dempsey are doing their thing, there's nothing. There is nothing like it in MLS. Not now that Landon's gone, and the LA kind of triangle between Zardes, Keane, Donovan is not there. I mean, there's just nothing like it in this league. So those two, to me, out of the West, have to be you're kind of, to me, are the teams that just between what I how I perceive to be good soccer, what I like. I mean, those two are tops. DC United has to be in the conversation. They're tested over a long regular season. They are well aware of what it's like to lose in the playoffs. I think sometimes when you taste postseason defeat, that's part of your process to tasting postseason success. There was a time earlier this year where I was a little bit worried about the Revolution. That's obviously changed. But really, to me right now, those two teams out of the East and then New York primarily because of their midfield. I mean, that three, I just remember after the DC United game, how much respect DC United was given, Dax, Sasho, Martins. That three in midfield is really, really, really good. And I think with a guy like Bradley Wright Phillips, if he catches fire and in October, November, like, they're going places. You know what I mean? They're going places. So that's, to me, your top three in the East. I don't have a third in the West. I just, to me, it's Dallas and Seattle right now set aside, and I'm a bit waiting for another third to develop. You know, Vancouver, for me, I'll be honest, I haven't seen as much of them, but the points are impressive. They've played more games than everybody. And you know, the way that they kind of didn't deliver against DC United, the game I watched the most intensely, raised my eyebrows a little bit about just how good the start to the season has been for them.
So two last things before I let you go. You mentioned, we talked about 1 through 17 as far as United's concerned and kind of being on that same level all the way through as opposed to a team that's top heavy. You take a Martins off of that team or you take Dempsey off of Seattle. Do you still love the team or do they now drop a rung? Because you're right, those two are the best thing going together, but is are they good enough with if only one of them can go?
They are not, to me. Obviously, they're not as good. I don't know. I think that partnership is what makes it. That's a good question, man. That's a good question. I think Seattle's a really good team. So I think they could still, with one of those guys, make a run. But I think with both of those guys, they're the team you expect to make the run.
Yeah.
They're the team that should make the run. They're the team that probably will, at some point, break through and make that MLS Cup run. They have such a home field advantage. And they have those two guys up top. And in the playoffs, when things get tight, I don't know. It's like, you know, same thing we said at the beginning of this with Club America. When those two guys hit that next gear, is there a defense in MLS that can stop them? I don't know. And I think those two guys know how to hit that next gear in big games. And I believe that will continue to happen if they're healthy. If they're not, Dempsey's an exceptional player. Martins is an exceptional player. One of them could beat you on a day. But that partnership, beyond just the fact that you're so worried about both, but man, just what they do. I mean, they just do things that are next level that we don't see in this league. They beat defenses in a way that defenses aren't even prepared to defend against.
Completely agree. And, you know, kind of the reason I asked you that, and I agree with you about watching Castillo play, and to me, he's the most exciting guy on the ball in MLS right now. But I still feel like if we had a matchup, Seattle versus FC Dallas, winner goes to MLS Cup, and Castillo wasn't available, but Martins and Dempsey were, I would still go, hey, you know what? If this goes here, this goes here, I feel like FC Dallas could win. If one of those two guys is off of Seattle, I feel like then Dallas then becomes the favorite in that matchup. So I guess what I'm saying is Castillo is great, but I feel like he is more replaceable on that FC Dallas team than either of the two guys are on Seattle.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't, that's tough. That's tough.
I know it's hard.
Let me say this about FC Dallas, though. Let's a little bit hold off judgment, because they have done this before. They've
Yes.
hot started before and then crashed and failed to make the playoffs. They've hot started before and kind of gotten to the playoffs and petered out. I want to see them September, October, November doing this. They've shown before they can do this now.
Agreed.
Show me that this high end is sustainable and that this high end is something you can replicate when it matters most, when other teams are tuned up the most defensively, when you're going up against the best defenses, you know, in the playoffs, when the talent pool has thinned to the very best. Then I think FC Dallas still has to answer that question. And until they do, even if you're pulling guys out for Seattle, you got to give Seattle the edge, because in my opinion, the Sounders have, while they haven't won it all, they have answered that question. They have answered that they can sustain long-term success and they can go deep in competitions.
Fair point. And last thing, if we're going to go from that end to the other end, which of the teams, the traditional contending teams that are, I don't want to say struggling, but not where we would expect them to be at this point in the season, are you concerned about? And this would be kind of the reverse of New England last year, where we were concerned and then it turned out to be for naught because then they turned into a juggernaut. I feel the same thing about Galaxy as I do every year. They're just going to do enough to get to the playoffs, and then they're going to be a team that you got to reckon with in the playoffs. Sporting Kansas City is a team where I'm not seeing what I thought I would see from them, and I don't know why I'm not seeing it, which then makes me nervous.
Well, Sporting Kansas City has a ton of new faces, and that is a system that Peter Vermes plays that is very specific. You got to know what you're doing. So I think the fact that they're above the line right now with at the very beginning of bringing all these, I think it's 13 new players in this year, I think that means they're either at the curve or a little bit ahead of it, because I think they're going to trend up as guys figure out how we play the SKC way and how I fit in and how I can be better at my specific job in this. I think Sporting Kansas City, I'm not so worried about. To me, the two teams that immediately jump out are RSL and Portland. One, because I've always enjoyed their specific matchups. When RSL and Portland have played over the last 2 years, it has, to me, been some of the most exciting, attractive soccer in MLS. And to see them right now, you know, hey, they're not far off where they need to be. This is a long season. But I have questions about both teams, and I think that those two teams specifically, to me, both out west, are the teams that you say, what, you know, what's going on? Like, why aren't they doing what?
Yeah.
Why aren't they above the red line just this minute? And then the only other team that I think, look, Montreal's played like 5 minutes.
Exactly.
The other two teams below the red line in the East are expansion teams. Philly, like, what is going on in Philadelphia? Are they TFCing? Are they just like unable to, for whatever reason, figure it out? I'll say this. I think they're a really dangerous team because right now they're that wounded dog and you don't know what you're going to get out of them on a certain day. But they're really having some struggles. They're in areas of the game, these struggles, that should be kind of fundamental, which raises a lot of questions. So I think the Union are just overall a pretty serious disappointment. But I don't know how much people expected out of them. To me, the other two that I'm most worried about, primarily because I like them, I like watching them play, I like watching them play well, is Portland and RSL.
Yeah, and, you know, we've seen this from Portland before, and I'm sure they're going to have a hot streak at some point, but we also know that those hot streaks are followed by extreme cold streaks or even streaks where you go, why aren't they getting more points than they're getting? So I guess of those two, for me, I do look at RSL and go, okay, when are they putting all the pieces together?
Yeah, it's I mean, that's a tough question. This game is so nebulous, and this season, the seasons go, you know, they always say you need what, one good month to make the playoffs. Now with six teams making it, I mean, you put together one incredible month and you kind of float the rest of the way, you can make the postseason and make a run. So I feel a little bit sheepish kind of looking at these teams and saying,
of course,
you're not doing what I want you to do yet, because that's not the point. The point is to do what I want you to do in September and October. And that's what this whole thing is about. And, you know, it's funny, we didn't mention this when talking about DC United, but that, I think, is the one area where all this depth could create a high-end problem for DC United. And that is, when you're trying to really identify that starting 11 for the first playoff game, there's a lot of choices. So there's a lot of places for a manager to maybe not nail it. And because of that, I think that's something, not a concern, but it's something to watch for with DC United. All of this squad rotation, does it slow Ben Olsen's ability to find that right 11 for the game when he needs to have his best effort, for the games when he needs to have his team's best effort?
Stay tuned for the tweet up, Pitch Pass and Sebi Salazar, as we do the Capital Soccer Show reunion, if you will, and we'll make it open to the public. We'll tweet out the info. Sebi, thank you, my friend. We'll have you on over the course of the season, I'm sure.
Awesome, man. Glad to be back with you, and yeah, let's do it again soon.
Pitch Pass. For more show information, go to pitchpass.com.